This next conversation is about consent and the consequences when consent is not given. And for those of you with young ones listening or those who might be upset by conversations around sexual assault, this material is explicit and could be triggering.
I remember when I was about 18 and there was this guy who is a friend of mine who I just thought was the most beautiful person in the world. And we had gone out one night, we'd been drinking a lot, and it wasn't until I turned around and saw him naked and he started taking my clothes off and pushing my head down that I realized that a really not a tiny part of me wanted to do that.
Isabel Jung is a correspondent for Vice on HBO. It was her own experience years ago that motivated her to make a new documentary film called Consent.
I remember saying to him, I don't really want to have sex. I also remember him kind of taking that as a cue to convince me.
But the film explores more than just the conversations required before a sexual interaction. In this current moment of Me Too and the emergence of decades-old sexual assault allegations in the public arena, Jung says we need to also be thinking about how to better deal with the trauma of the past. And what does that reckoning look like? In some cases, she says it looks like dialogue.
I think there's more awareness over it. I think that people are starting to talk about it. I mean, especially given what's happened over the last year, it's been almost a year since the Harvey Weinstein allegations came out. And there is a real trickle effect when that happens in Hollywood and in other parts of our society. And we start talking about what consent looks like for ourselves in our own daily lives, in our own sex lives and in dating.
What is consent? How is it being defined today? And has that definition evolved?
I was worried you were going to ask that question. I still don't know. It is essentially an agreement between normally two people as to whether we move forward with sex or not. But it is incredibly difficult to define, which is one of the things we found out in this piece. And how you get to the point of consent is constantly up for debate. One of the things that we explored in this piece was affirmative consent, you know, needing to have a solid yes before you move forward with any kind of sexual interaction. And that on the face of it is great because that would just dispel any kind of confusion around this topic. But when we actually think about it, you know, needing to have a yes when you stroke someone's hand, when you kiss someone, not always seen as very sexy. But maybe that's a problem with our society and our norms of what sexy and romance is. And maybe we need to start redefining that.
And then the question becomes, well, part of the question in this film is what can be gained by talking to the people who have hurt you? And I think that's a really delicate place to go, particularly given what we're learning recently about the how long it takes, how these memories can be stored. I mean, does it help to confront the person or talk to them?
I think that it certainly depends on your own situation and how that trauma has manifested itself and how you feel about that particular scenario playing out. What we tracked in this documentary is a case of two adults who 10 years ago had sex. One person called that consensual sex a drunken incident. One person called that rape. And they sat down and had a face-to-face conversation.
I told myself it was a dream and that the things I thought I had seen and imagined just couldn't be real. Like really not wanting to face the next level of this line of questioning.
There's a lot that I don't remember how I got into your room, why I came into your room, when it happened, any of those details.
Witnessing that was incredibly powerful, very, very moving, raw conversation with a lot of vulnerability and a lot of humanity and forgiveness there as well.
It became the default was to believe you. And I became this source of problem in our community, this source of like a incongruity. No one could imagine you. I didn't want to see you like this. No one could imagine you like this. And it was easier to dismiss it. And so by default, everyone believed you. And you didn't have to do anything or change anything. And you got to keep everything the way it was. And I had to leave everything and leave everybody.
One of my biggest regrets throughout all of this is, in addition to, you know, hurting you that night and causing that trauma, I had 10 years of opportunities to write that. And I discarded you in this process.
It's interesting because at this time, where we're talking about what accountability looks like. I mean, we really don't have a lot of options for how to handle situations that often happened years ago or even decades ago. And so this is one option to face it with conversation and dialogue.
Isn't there, I mean, I would also say it's a pretty dangerous way to approach it, depending on your situation. I mean, do you recommend trying to do that with a licensed professional, or is it something that you should just do on your own, call the person, or
No, certainly not.
Brings up a lot of feelings.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And as I said, it's definitely not for everyone, and I wouldn't recommend doing it without seeking professional advice at all. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. It's a very controversial technique. It can cause re-traumatization. It can be seen as a too soft an approach for some people. I mean, some people do deserve to go through the criminal justice system. This is just an alternative option that I wasn't aware of before making this documentary and that we wanted to bring to the table as a possibility for some people.
Is there any other way that people should be thinking about getting to that level of reconciliation without a face-to-face meeting? And I think we often talk about forgiveness in a way that that's the end goal, but is it?
No, I mean, and in those restorative justice sessions, I should say that the end goal is not necessarily forgiveness. The restorative justice sessions allow the survivor to be in the driver's seat. And so it's up to them whether they forgive or not, or whether they want more sessions, or whether they want to continue that conversation, or whether they want to just let it go. There are obviously many different ways in which individuals find healing and find closure. And this is definitely not a be-all and end-all solution for everyone. I would say that there are limited options because, you know, as we all know, the criminal justice system is often fails us in when we want to handle these situations. And 6 out of 1,000 cases of sexual assault go without convictions. And so we have very limited options, but this is just one of the ones that we tried to showcase here.
And at the beginning of the film, you mentioned your own experience that you said falls into the sort of gray area of consent. Did that experience make you change the way you think about trauma?
I think that it's an interesting time to talk about trauma. If the last few days have shown us anything, it is that trauma is real and lasting and can run extremely deep. I've been surprised over the last year or so that that experience has had a lasting impact and that I do find myself thinking back to that very uncomfortable moment that I thought I'd left behind a long time ago.
Isabel Jung is a correspondent for Vice on HBO. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.